Welcome back to the Fitness Drifter podcast. My name is Abby, and in this podcast, I try and help you build a better, happier, healthier, stronger relationship with food, fitness, nutrition, and your own body. So in this episode, we are carrying on where we left off from the last episode. I am traveling with work, so I don't have as much time to deep dive into topics. Last week was part one of some myth busting, some common fitness myths and misconceptions. I still cannot pronounce the word myths properly. If you haven't listened to part one, it's the last episode before this one, so please do check it out. So we're just going to pick up from number 13. And number 13 is detoxing can kickstart weight loss. I'm sure a lot of us have been there. We get up on like the 2nd or 3rd of January. We reflect on the indulgence over the last few weeks from Christmas and New Year and the festive season. We feel guilty. We feel like we've put on some weight and we feel almost desperate to lose it. And we kind of feel like we need to almost cleanse ourselves to get our insides working again. And that's where this sort of super strict, super clean detox or juice cleanse comes in. It's not always something that happens in January, but that tends to be the most common time of year. Now, I will concede there can be a benefit to detoxing in the sense that it can result in a quick short-term weight loss. And sometimes that is a momentum you need to carry on and get longer-term consistent results, but it isn't some long-term fix and you honestly don't really have to do it. Gradual, easy lifestyle changes, moderation, and some portion control with balance means that you should never really need a detox in terms of general health, well-being, and weight management. Yes, we might have some indulgent periods like around Christmas that we want to counter with some more nutritious periods. And that just requires some moderation and a little bit more direct response. It doesn't mean you need like a full detox. All of your best results for pretty much any health or fitness goal come from small, consistent daily habits that make up your lifestyle, not from big sweeping gestures like a 2-week cleanse or a 2-week detox. Number 14 is trying to burn off treats or trying to burn off meals, or I think the expression that's most commonly used is trying to outrun your diet, and you cannot outrun a bad diet. Now, first of all, one thing to bear in mind is that if you're exercising purely to burn off the food that you ate, that's starting to lean towards eating disorder territory. And in more extreme cases, it can be similar to the behavior you'll see in bulimia. And I have done an episode on that, which you can listen to or you can read up on the website, fitnessdrifter.com. And one of the behaviors of bulimia is binge eating and then purging, which can include long bouts of exercise to try and burn it off. So it's important to be very mindful that even if you're not at the level where it'd be diagnosed as an eating disorder, your behavior pattern, if you're exercising only because you want to burn off food, is kind of starting to lean in that direction and lean towards, you know, that kind of behavior pattern. Occasionally, now and then, fine. Say that you've overindulged more than you wanted to once and you decide that you want to try and, you know, almost just do it to make yourself feel better. Now and then, that's fine. It's when it starts to become kind of a consistent habit, then it starts to have more of an impact. And on that note, it is a toxic balancing act. You know, foods should be enjoyed. There can be a social aspect and there can be an enjoyment aspect. And exercise should be the same thing. Eating a bit more shouldn't be seen as a sin or something to feel guilty about or that you need to sort of absolve yourself for it through exercise. Food should fuel you and you should be able to enjoy it. And exercise should also empower you. And a diet that's consistent in poor nutrition and high in calories, you can't really out-exercise it. And when I talk about a bad diet, I mean, I'll give you this example. Someone that's consistently like binge drinking every week and eating fast food a few times a week and not getting any fruit or vegetables in. Exercise can still have an impact on your health, but the positive impact of exercise probably isn't going to undo the negative impact of that kind of eating and drinking lifestyle. Having said that, if you're out maybe every couple of weeks or you're drinking every couple of weeks and you have fast food maybe even 2-3 times a week, but most of your diet is foods that are pretty high in nutrition, so lean protein, complex carbs, fiber, good fats, fruit and vegetables, and you're getting plenty of variety within that, then honestly, as long as you're ticking those boxes, you're probably fine. If you're exercising only to try and burn off the foods that you're eating, number one, you don't have a great relationship with that food or with exercise. Number two, it's starting to lean towards eating disorder behavior. And number three, you're probably not going, depending on how extreme your lifestyle is eating-wise or drinking-wise, it's unlikely that exercise is going to outdo all of the negative impacts that might be having on your health. Number 15, yoga isn't for men. I remember going to my first yoga class. I turned up 10 minutes before the start time thinking that was early and that I could just pick my spot at the back of the class and I'd be fine. No, it was me and pretty much all women who must have been doing yoga for years. And they all sort of had their own fixed spots and they all probably got there 20 minutes before to make sure that they had their spot. So me turning up 10 minutes early, but still almost the last one there, I ended up front and center and I was terrible at it. I was very self-conscious. I didn't know what I was doing, but I kept coming back again and again and again. Almost always I was the only guy there. But you know, if I look at how that impacted me doing yoga, I was calmer, I was happier. I had a period where I was completely distraction free, more so than any other kind of workout. My thoughts were calmed down and, you know, I could I felt like I could focus better on pretty much anything else I was doing outside of that class. Plus, my performance in the gym improved. I think the focus was better, but I was also stronger. I was moving better. I had better range of motion. My recovery was better, and I was feeling a lot less stiff. Yoga does have a very feminine perception, but it does a hell of a lot of good for men as well. Now, if you're a man listening to this and you don't feel comfortable going to a class, or you don't want to go to a yoga class, which ironically might be the only part of the gym where men typically don't feel comfortably going, then you can try doing it for free online. There's a couple of YouTube channels. Manful Yoga is a good one. There's another one called Breathe and Flow, which is pretty good. There's also apps. I used to really enjoy doing the yoga classes from the Peloton app. And there's also Asana Rebel and Allo Moves. It has a lot of benefits and it's worth exploring. Number 16, this one's mainly specific to squats, and that is that your knees shouldn't go past your toes. When in actual fact, there's no harm with them going past your toes in most cases. Now, this was pretty common when I first got into fitness, that when I first got into exercise, that your knees shouldn't be going past your toes. My understanding is the story behind this squat technique is it started when, mainly from being able to try and coach people sort of safe from a distance. So say if you were a personal trainer with a client that didn't like any kind of touch at all, or if you were instructing a class of people, or if you were instructing a boot camp, so you had multiple people at once, you kind of needed to keep them safe, but still try and get them, you basically needed to try and keep them safe. And I think when your knees go forward, the worry in those situations can be that your center of gravity moves forward, so you might lose your balance and you might fall or hurt yourself. But in most cases, assuming that you're keeping your heels grounded and you are keeping your center of gravity stable, it's not dangerous for your knees to go past your toes. Just as a little test, next time you're going up a flight of stairs, try to do it without letting your knees go past and see how far you get. Number 17, the idea of health at every size. Now, this one's not really a myth or misconception, but I kind of feel like my understanding of it is different to pretty much anyone else's, and it seems to get hijacked by extremes. So I kind of just wanted to clarify what my understanding of it actually is and why kind of pretty much every popular mainstream perception of it is wrong. And I want to choose my words very carefully because I'll probably get hate from both sides for my take on this. But health at every size is a movement that promotes the pursuit of health and well-being, regardless of body shape or size. I've done an article on this and I've done an episode on this before, and I've included links in the show notes. Studies generally do indicate that weight beyond a certain level can have a negative impact on physical health, and it's worth remembering health at every size does not mean the same thing as saying health at any size. Having said that, your current size or shape shouldn't be a limiter or a barrier to you wanting to do something for the improvement of your own well-being. So saying health at every size isn't incorrect. It's just, from my own perception at least, the interpretation seems to get skewed as saying that you can be fully healthy at any size. I also want to add that, health is a very broad term, covering pretty much every aspect of your physical body and your mental health as well. And yes, weight and size are one marker of physical health, but there's so many other aspects as well. So yeah, beyond a certain point, it's likely to have a negative impact on health, but there are other health markers as well. And regardless of your shape or size, it's no one's place to stop you or discriminate against you from wanting to pursue your own well-being. That's a very, very quick breakdown. I have done a previous episode on health at every size, so I would recommend listening to that for a little bit more detail. On the flip side, number 18, abs being a sign of health. When I first started losing weight, I wanted abs more than anything because I thought that was, a peak sign of male physical health and fitness. Getting abs takes hard work, a lot of training, and good, consistent, fairly strict dieting for long periods of time. But that doesn't mean you can't be healthy if you don't have abs. I think with athletes, they kind of, in most sports, will often just naturally have abs because of the lifestyle. And I guess it just kind of comes with the territory of their profession. If you look at bodybuilders, for example, they're on fitness magazine covers or on stage showing off their muscles. But if you look at them sort of most of the year, when they're not sort of in preparation for like a show or a shoot, they'll still be in good lean condition, but that doesn't mean they're going to have these visibly defined clear-cut abs. Same with movie stars. I remember Zac Efron publicly spoke about, the ordeal, I'm going to call it, the ordeal he went through trying to get in shape for Baywatch and how much he doesn't want to go to that extreme again. And it's worth remembering abs are a sign of a very low body fat percentage in the stomach area. They're not a specific sign of health, either mental or physical. In fact, I know a lot of people that they've gotten down to being lean enough to have visible abs, for a shoot or something. And as soon as that's done, they say they never want to get there again. In my case, I have a vague outline of abs. They're not always visible. They're almost never clearly defined, but I'm still pretty happy. I feel generally very healthy. I'm pretty lean and I'm very happy as I am. And I feel like I'm in a good space mentally and physically. Just because someone has abs doesn't mean that they're automatically super healthy. It just means that they're lean enough to have those muscles visible. Someone who is active and training and eats really nutritiously, they're more likely to have abs, but it's not an automatic, you have abs, therefore you're healthy. Number 19, finding the best time to work out. There's honestly no such thing as a best time to work out. Everyone's different. Everyone's life is different. The best time to work out is the time that you can fit it into your normal lifestyle easily and actually stick to it. For some people, that'll be early morning. For some evenings, or for some people like me, it might be middle of the day. When I was studying to be a personal trainer, one of my tutors did say that a study suggested men should lift weights after 8 a.m. because that's when testosterone is higher. I haven't found that study myself, but then even then, if I think about it, that little boost of having a higher level of testosterone after that time isn't going to outweigh you just doing things consistently when you can fit them in. And I think that's worth remembering. Number 20, walking doesn't do anything or isn't a valid form of exercise. To be fair, walking for a lot of people doesn't take a lot of exertion, and a lot of people think it doesn't do anything for health or for weight loss. In my case, it's actually become my number one priority in terms of exercise. I can skip weights, I can skip yoga, I can skip other things, but I won't skip my walking. I started walking a lot more when lockdown started, so in early 2020, and my habit just kind of built up from there. From September 2020 until March 2022, I didn't miss my Fitbit step target of 12,000 steps a day a single day. And then the only reason that streak ended up stopping is because I ended up having surgery in March. But then after that surgery, once I recovered, so early April 2022, I've been back on that and I haven't missed my step target any day since. And we are recording this in the second half of August. It's become such a huge part of my lifestyle now. It's low impact. It's easy on the joints. It builds endurance and stamina. It builds leg strength. It works the core. It can make you focus on posture as well. Plus, it forces you to get out of the house and often, not always, but often away from screens. So it can have a lot of mental health benefits as well, just because it gets you kind of out of the bubble of work or life that you're in. I got to the lightest weight I've been in my adult life when I started walking regularly, and my walking habit has made it a lot easier for me to kind of stay at a stable weight and stay relatively lean. If it's raining, I can stay indoors, multitask, and watch Netflix on a treadmill. If it's sunny outside, then, you know, I can do a walking meditation or listen to a podcast or listen to an audiobook. So I kind of take that sort of entertainment box as well. It's low cost, low effort, low risk of injury, and it does a hell of a lot of good. So definitely, definitely walk more. Number 21, and smaller meals throughout the day boosts your metabolism, so it was better than bigger meals. This was very common when I first started getting into fitness, the idea that you should eat 5 or 6 small meals a day to keep your metabolism boosted, and it'll help you burn more calories throughout the day, so you'll lose more weight. I tried it and I really didn't like it because I didn't ever feel hungry, but then I also never felt full and satisfied. And I really like that feeling when I eat. I don't have to feel completely stuffed, but at the end of a normal sized dinner for me, I like to feel well fed and nourished. And that was never happening with these kinds of smaller meals. Small meals can have some benefits. You may end up eating a bit less if weight loss is your goal. You're less likely to snack because you're having more meals more regularly, and your blood sugar may stay stable, and you're less likely to have sort of energy ups and downs, so you don't get sluggish after a meal, for example. But in terms of calories burned, I haven't found any studies to suggest that process or that approach actually boosts your metabolism to burn more calories. And I also talk about intermittent fasting as a counterpoint. With intermittent fasting, you eat within a set time period, normally 4 to 8 hours, and that depends on what kind of plan you're following. And then outside of that eating window, you fast the rest of the time. If fat loss is your goal, you eat less because you're eating your day's calories in a much shorter window of time, so you tend to feel fuller, and you may also find that your energy levels improve. Digestion uses a lot of energy, so if your body isn't digesting, you have more energy in your fasting window to focus on other things and can focus better. I tried it before. I actually still do a modified version because it worked well for me. I typically eat between 10 a.m. and 8 p.m., so it's around a 10-hour window. I used to do an 8-hour window eating from midday till 8 p.m., but my body stopped reacting well to it after a while, so I decided to stop. But the 10-hour eating does work well for me. It's a watered-down version of intermittent fasting, and a lot of people will probably say it doesn't even count, but it works for me. Excuse that tangent, but my point is that your overall nutrition and food volume are more important than your meal timing. Yes, if you're active and training, you'll want to plan some of your food intake around that, but that might be the only sort of main thing to consider. Number 22, you can't gain muscle without weight. You don't have to lift weights as such to gain strength to build muscle. If you look at gymnasts, if you look at people who do calisthenics, they're incredibly strong and ridiculously well built. The thing is that weights, both machines and free weights, are easier to track your progress with, and you have fewer limitations. I don't think there's a bodyweight equivalent of deadlifts, for example. And to some extent, in some cases, the skill level required is lower. Like if you look at the barbell overhead press versus like a pike or a handstand pushup, a lot more people are going to at least have the basic skill to press a bar overhead. So in that sense, weights are probably more friendly to newbies, but it's very definitely possible to build strength and muscle with body weight and without traditional weights. The main thing is that your muscles are being consistently overloaded and you can do that with body weight. I learned this the hard way when lockdown started and I couldn't use weights because all the gyms were closed. All I had was my pull-up bar, my suspension trainer or TRX and resistance bands. And it did the trick for me for a time. My pull-ups and push-ups got a lot better, my chest got a bit bigger, and my arms got a bit more defined as well. I let my leg strength slide because I absolutely hate bodyweight leg exercises, but aside from that, it did me a lot of good. Plus, with body weights or calisthenics, you learn how to move a bit differently. I engage my core more readily now since I started doing pull-ups and push-ups more. My flexibility has gotten better, which ties in also because I started doing yoga. I'm less sore, and I really do feel like I know how to engage my muscles better as well. I have gone back to doing some weights, but I'd say I'm around a 50-50 split between weights and bodyweight exercises. Most of the weight exercises I do are the ones I couldn't replicate with body weight. So deadlifts, clean and press, barbell shoulder press because I cannot do handstand or pike pushups, and bicep curls just because I want bigger biceps. And number 23 and last one for this episode is the idea of trying to follow a perfect diet or a perfect workout. There's really no perfect training plan or perfect diet. Different things will work for different people in different ways at different times. If you keep aiming for perfection, yeah, you might hit it. You might stick to it for a long time and, you know, great, that's good for you. I personally could never stay 100% perfect 100% of the time, and I really did try. But I got great results being less than perfect, but being consistent and just always turning up. I want to enjoy my life. I want to feel fit and healthy and strong. I want to nourish my body and look after my well-being. Sometimes I also want to dip my Oreos into peanut butter and enjoy that taste experience. And you know what? I have a good balance at the minute. I have fun. I enjoy myself. I don't miss out on things, but then I also look after my health. I turn up consistently. I work hard enough and have enough discipline with my food to keep me making progress. That doesn't mean excusing yourself from doing hard work. It's about making sure that the hard work has a purpose and allowing yourself to have some fun at the same time. That's what balance is. Yes, if you're a professional athlete, for example, you might need to go 100% all in for a period of time. That's different. But to be honest, if you're a professional athlete, I question what you're doing listening to this podcast. You're very much off tangent from my target audience. But yeah, for like professional athletes and, you know, that kind of thing, professional athletes, movie stars, celebrities, that's a sort of separate topic, I guess. Excuse that tangent. But yeah, an imperfect workout plan and diet executed perfectly and consistently is going to get you much further in the long run than a perfect workout plan and diet that you can't execute perfectly. So aim for progress, aim for improvement, aim to keep being that little bit better and growing that little bit more. But don't think you have to be perfect to succeed or to get any success. And don't think that if you have been less than perfect that you somehow failed. You know, consistency and progress are much more important than aiming for perfection. So that is a grand total over two episodes of 23 fitness myths we've tried to tackle. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach me on the website, fitnessdrifter.com, or you want to reach me on social media, you can find me on TikTok, on Twitter, on Instagram. My username is fitnessdrifter, all one word on all of them. If you enjoyed this episode or if you enjoyed any of the other ones, please remember to like, leave a review, subscribe if you can, and share with your friends. Thanks.